In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And we are back after a long hiatus, somewhat long hiatus.
Quite long.
Long break.
A little longer than we expected.
Yes, longer than we expected. And the main reason for that is, I had sent in a video for Mike to use for this, but he didn't. And that's okay, because he had stuff going on.
Yeah.
The main reason for this is because my entire household, courtesy of one of my oldest child, has spent the last 3 weeks or so with COVID.
Blame the kid.
Oh yeah, jeez, I'm throwing his ass under the bus for this.
Oh
one.
My
He's
god,
the one who brought it at
home. I mean, that really sucks. I'm glad you're feeling better. God, because when you sent me that first video, no, dude, that's not happening.
Yeah, we were in the midst of being sick. I had just. And the way the course ran is, let me go back and explain some of this. So what happened is the oldest kid started showing signs of being sick, and we had COVID tests at home. We administered a COVID test almost automatically to this kid.
Yeah.
And negative test. So we're like, all right, he's just sick. We start plying him with all the over-the-counter medications and whatnot. Next thing we know, the middle child, he starts having a runny nose. And now let me explain first what the symptoms here were. We were dealing with head congestion, sinus pressure, headaches, runny nose in the front, runny nose down the back of the throat, and irritating the throat and coughing, which are not the classic signs of the original COVID, but as we came to learn later, are the signs of more of the newer strains of
yes.
COVID.
Yes.
So the next oldest child who has a room right next, their rooms are kind of right next to each other. They share the same bathroom, and there's really no, I would have to sit up outside their bathroom and be sanitizing things, you know, as each person goes in. They share enough air. We knew that there was, we knew that when one kid was sick, and again, at first we did not know it was COVID because he tested negative. We have a family, we have kids. When one kid gets sick, everybody in the house gets sick. That's just kind of how it works. Disclaimer about having kids for all of you that don't yet, that are waiting for later in life. Your kid is a germ factory. It will bring home illness and you will all get sick. But
all you
they're
new,
still adorable.
All you new parent Xenials that are pushing 40, just to let you know, this is what you're in for.
And all the anybody younger that's listening to this that's contemplating whether they want to have kids, if you do, you do. Great. Just know the things that you're getting yourself into.
Yeah.
You're getting yourself into a life of being covered in another person's bodily fluids and not by your own choice or sexual perversion. It's going to happen to you because that's what kids do. They're going to destroy just about everything that you own. That's just the nature of it. And they are going to get you sick constantly. So there's only so much you can do to fight it. Especially when the kids are sick. When the parents are sick, you can isolate yourself a little more. Kids are they're going to get everybody sick. So
yep.
the next youngest child, the middle child, he ended up exhibiting nothing more than the entire run of this, a runny nose. Now, the downside is when he gets a runny nose, he likes to rub his nose over and over. He doesn't like to use tissues. He doesn't like to use handkerchiefs. He just rubs his nose until half his face is raw. So that's a little fun. But he had a runny nose. The youngest child, the daughter, who eventually did get everything as well, was sick for like 2 days. Yeah, she was sick for like 2 days.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But the next person to get sick was my wife. And, oh boy, she ended up with the very worst of it. So she got sick about the time she was dealing with him. She eventually, it had not gone away for almost a week. So we contacted doctors, got an over-the-phone doctor appointment. And they were like, okay, come down to the clinic. We're going to do a COVID test and we're going to do a strep test. Did both tests. Strep test come back immediately negative. COVID test was one of the longer term COVID tests. It came back negative as well, but he was still sick. So they gave him some antibiotics in the hope of maybe it was something that didn't show up. Maybe it was a bacterial thing that didn't show up. That for how long he's sick, a virus, he should have gotten over most viruses by then. Let's give him an antibiotic. Let's see if that works. So we got an antibiotic. He took the antibiotic. No real change in him. He wasn't really getting, he's getting maybe a little bit better, but we weren't sure, was he getting better because of the antibiotic, or was he getting better because it was still so, it's been so many days, maybe his whatever he has, his body's fighting it off. We weren't sure. That's when my wife got sick. And so since he had gotten an antibiotic, she was like, I'm going to call the doctor, see if they can give me an antibiotic, because maybe it's working with him, maybe it's not, we don't know, but I'm just gonna get on board with the antibiotic. So she got the antibiotic. Again, watching as that's progressing, as she gets her antibiotic, he's halfway through his antibiotic. That's when I get sick finally, about the middle of a week.
Good
and so
God.
it comes to Friday. By Friday, I had gotten an antibiotic as well, hoping that, so far nothing has come up as a positive COVID test for anybody. So, the child and the wife are on the antibiotic train. Let me get on the antibiotic train too. Luckily at this point, the grandmother and the sister-in-law have shown no symptoms, but Friday rolls around when we're supposed to be doing a podcast and, I'm in communication with you, right? Talking about whether we should do it. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking to myself, maybe I should send this video to Mike. And so I videoed myself talking in the voice that I I had at that time, with COVID ravaging my body as much as it was. Again, not knowing it was COVID, just knowing it was some kind of head cold type thing that was giving me tons of sinus drainage and just making me cough all the time and just messing up my throat. And so I send him this video and he's just like, yeah, we're not doing the podcast. I'm like, yeah, that's about what I figured. Cause my voice was a couple octaves deeper and raspy, like I'd been a cigarette smoker for 30 years.
Yeah. I just from the video on my phone, like when I saw it, I was just like, you're not doing this. You sound like fucking Garfield. Like, and he straight up sounded like Lorenzo Music, like to a T. And I was like, that would be funny, but it would be funny for about like 30 seconds. And then I would have a serious concern. And then I just got to tell you, do you realize the amount of editing that I would have had to have done for all of your fucking coughing? If you thought you could pull off an hour podcast, if not longer with that? No way, dude. No way. And to his credit, he did definitely push. He was the one who was pushing doing the podcast. I was the one that had to tell him no, because I know that he really enjoys doing this. And otherwise, why would we be doing it? But at the same time, I'm like, dude, I know it's not work. Like, neither one of us are getting paid for this shit. But like, it's just so. It was just so much like I couldn't let you do that to your voice for that long. You needed to sleep, man, as much as you could, or rest as much as you could.
Admittedly, I did want to do it for the humor factor.
Yeah.
Just because I thought it would be funny as shit to have that voice on the podcast.
Yeah.
That would have been damn hilarious. I would have listened to it and just laughed at my voice, just been like, that's great, that's fantastic. This is one of those voices where like you want to do your voicemail message, with that voice, just because it's just so like not the normal thing. But finally, after getting a bunch more over the counter COVID tests, antibiotics didn't seem to be working really on anybody. For a couple of days, my wife looked like she was better, and then suddenly she had like a full-on relapse and got even worse. And we were like, "What the heck is going on?" Again, still not knowing what this thing was.
Mm-hmm.
We get into that weekend.
That's an Omicron thing too.
Well, we get into that weekend, and sure as hell for that weekend, she takes one of the over-counter tests, and boom, immediate positive for COVID. So I take one. No positive on me. I'm still negative. It's like, this is frustrating. See, there's even some cops you're going to have to edit out of this one. Sorry.
I'm gonna leave that one in just for that.
Good. This is you know, we're at the point where like this is frustrating, but okay, it looks like now we have COVID. So we test the kid again. He comes up negative, and it's like, okay, all right, this is weird. Next day, suddenly the grandmother's not feeling well. So it's like, all right, we're running the gamut here. Test her. Boom, she comes up with a positive. So it's like, all right, we know with two positives, even if everybody else is testing negative, with two positives, we got COVID in the house.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Calls coming from inside the house, man.
Yep, it is. Mm-hmm. So we just, luckily we knew that while it was, while this specific strain with our household, and I'm saying those things because I don't want to give misinformation. I don't want to say, no, this strain of COVID, whatever strain of COVID we had, is not deadly. It's not, it very much well can be deadly. But in our household anyway, the upside of this specific strain that we seem to have was that it really wasn't deadly as much as it was just really, really uncomfortable and really, really annoying. And it was, I mean, super uncomfortable to the point where you really just couldn't concentrate on anything because your head hurt so damn much from having it.
Yeah.
And it was just the miserable. We were all just basically miserable. And so we go through the week. The grandmother is sick enough that she's not, you know, no worry about anything bad happening to her. She doesn't have to go to the hospital, but she is definitely sick enough that she's not getting downstairs and getting food. Mm-hmm. She's just worried about her head feeling too heavy and wobbly and whatnot. So I'm bringing food up to her, you know, as things are going. Again, the kid is the oldest kid finally starts to feel better, and he's running around all, you know, great and wonderful and, you know, wanting to go back to school, which luckily this last week was a week off of school anyway. They've kind of changed certain breaks off school. They have a new break in February now for school, for kids. It's been changed since the COVID times.
Oh, really? So this is like that's interesting.
Some kids were off this last week. Some kids are going to be off next week. Our kids happened to have school off for this last week. So it was like they were all getting better to the point where they all could have probably gone back to school this week. But we found out that there was no school for them. So we were just like, well, okay, one more week for recovery for the parents at least.
Yeah, that actually works out real well.
It worked out well.
Yeah.
We found out why my wife had a relapse and had it worse.
Why?
Something that they don't talk to you about in all the COVID literature and all the stuff to do with that is that if you're somebody who has sleep apnea and has to use a machine to sleep at night, a BiPAP or CPAP machine, one of the, you know what these machines are, right? You're familiar with those, with BiPAP and CPAPs?
Yes.
And basically it's just a mask you wear that puts positive airway pressure into your lungs. Because when you have sleep apnea, you stop breathing at night, and that doesn't make you have a proper sleep cycle. It robs your body of oxygen, so your body can't regenerate itself and do the things it needs to, what sleep cycles are there for.
Yeah.
If you have a BiPAP or CPAP, you shouldn't use it if you have COVID. Because what you end up doing, because you're breathing into a completely contained system, it's not a filtered system like the oxygen you'd be put on like at the hospital is. It is filtered to an extent, but it's a system that you have a tube and a mask that will hold on to particulate, including any kind of virus or whatever that you have. So when you have COVID, using that machine will actually make you reinfect yourself, basically. And that's what she did, we figure, at least, was reinfect herself. So she stopped using her machine.
One of the attributes of this, I mean, there's subvariant on subvariant. We've hit Scrabble at this point. Like, when we're talking about like which kind of subvariant or whatever, these are all offshoots of the Omicron subvariant, right? And, as has been a characteristic of it, my apologies for taking this long to explain it, is that it does come back potentially. Like, that was like the whole thing with, when people were taking, I can't remember what the name of the medicine was. Paxlovid. That's what it was. When people were taking Paxlovid, and then there was like Paxlovid, like positivity relapse, like 5 days later, you take the Paxlovid and you're good for that 5-day span, and you have minimal you have minimal symptoms and you're kicking around okay, and then you're negative, and then after 5 days you get another positive test, and sometimes you have symptoms and sometimes you don't. But I thought that when you told me that she had been positive again, it was because of a rebound, because rebounds do happen. As a matter of fact, when I got sick with it back in late July, early August last year, this variant that you got is a subvariant of the one that I got. And the one that I got, what?
Real quick, I just want to add, we do not have exact confirmation of which variant we got. We are just basing our understanding on what is known in the public realm of things.
Yes.
I just want to be clear that for our specific situation in our household, we did not get any level of testing that would identify a specific variant or a specific version of a specific variant. We are basing this on assumption, and I just want to be clear that that's what we're doing.
Yes, give or take, it's
educated assumption, but it is still assumption without any definitive proof. Yeah.
No. Yes, I understand that the definitive proof more so is not attributed to a single person. Right now, the variant that we are talking about is the one that has taken over, as of 2 days ago, 75% of all positive cases in the United States.
Likely, yes.
Yeah, so that is the most likely one that you got. Logically, it makes the most sense that it may be the one that you got. Now, like I said earlier, a property of that variant and its parent variant, because it's a sub of that subvariant, it branches out, man. That's what viral evolution does. But the property of that variant is it goes dormant and then it comes back. And people were thinking that it was Paxlovid. When I got sick, I was positive for 12 days. And I was symptomless after 5. So I got sick day one. I didn't even test positive day one until I tested myself again at home, and I was deep positive, like what you had said. Like, it showed positive within a couple of minutes. Like, it's rampant. And so, but when I actually went to the urgent care, because that was the closest place to go to get tested, they said I tested negative. And by 5 p.m., the doctor had seen my symptoms. I had learned earlier that there was an outbreak somewhere I was at. So all the symptoms they had seen and everything, they're like, oh yeah, the doctor who I saw at the urgent care center went, oh yeah, you got it. And then I ended up testing negative. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'm fine. And then by 5 p.m., that doctor called me, and I had woken up from a nap after it hit me like a truck like 3 hours earlier. So, and then I tested again to make doubly positive that I was positive. I absolutely was. But that positive test stayed with me for 12 days. 5 days I was cool. Like, I wasn't feeling any symptoms, no more fever, no more cough. Well, I mean, relatively speaking, you're still working some stuff out, like remnants of being sick. But the positivity of the test was solid for 12 days with me. But most people become asymptomatic and they're like, oh, okay, that's probably not a big deal. So I thought that was the case. And in many cases, that may be what happens. But that is a mind fuck to me. But it makes logical sense that it would do that too, right?
You're speaking of what the CPAP machine does.
Yeah, the CPAP machine. I'm sorry, let me clarify. The CPAP machine makes a lot of sense that it would do that, as much as that sucks. I am kind of looking ahead from that, looking past that at this point, knowing that that's the case. And the first thing that I think of is, well, how the hell are you supposed to sleep if you can't use a CPAP machine? If you depend on that?
That was my wife's struggle for about 5 days trying to get any kind of sleep without her machine, because she's been sleeping on her machine for years now.
Yeah.
And so she doesn't even take naps without having the machine on. And so it was a real, real struggle for her to try to work her way through that. Luckily, she is on the other side of it at this point.
Good.
The grandmother is coming on the other side of it slowly but surely. We're taking her slowly. And the key is, like you're talking about, the lingering effect that this has. This just hangs around. Normally, if you have most viruses, you're sick for a couple of days, Even most bacterial things, once you get your antibiotics on board, you're pretty well kicking that thing quickly.
Yeah.
This has been lingering. I mean, I've felt bad for almost 2 weeks now. My wife almost 3 weeks. And so it's just, and again, I'm on the other side of this. I still have a little bit of cough, a little bit mm-hmm. of sore throat
yep.
from it, but the sinus pressure and drainage is gone. But it's still a situation of, feeling a little bit, still a little bit tired, and my body is still a little worn out. I'm eating a lot of food and not gaining any weight. So that's telling me that my body is still burning the yep. stuff, the food in me. But yeah, it's the lingering effect is kind of the most frustrating part of it.
Yeah.
But again, it's, I can say there was no point in time where, I felt that it was, for our experience with this one, that we felt that it was deadly, we were going to die, we needed to get to the hospital. But we did feel really, really just a lot of pain, a lot of discomfort, and a lot of frustration from it. Even the grandmother, when she was in the worst of it, and she's not the best sick person around, she's one of those that is she just does not function well when she's sick.
Yeah,
there was a point when she was having her worst day, and I'm like, okay, do we need to go to the hospital? Do you need to go to the doctor? Do you need to go do something? I don't know. I said, well, do you feel as bad as you did when you got the COVID shots? And she was able to do two of the shots, but she didn't do the third one because she had bad reaction to each one of the shots. Mm. Now, keep in mind, she was the only one in the household that has been hospitalized with COVID, because when the initial thing was hitting, she did get hospitalized for like 5-6 days with COVID. So she had COVID, plus she had two of the shots, and her reactions to both shots were so bad, she was afraid to get a third shot.
Yeah.
She felt almost as bad with the two shots as she did when we had to take her into the hospital, although not quite as bad. When we had to take her to the hospital when she had COVID, she was actually almost completely incoherent.
Oh.
And she doesn't even remember those days of the days at home before she went to the hospital. She's lost a few days because of how bad she felt. So I asked her, do you feel even close to as bad as what you did when you got the shots? No, not even close to that. I'm like, all right. So until you feel close to that, we're not going to worry. You just keep that in your mind that you don't feel as bad as when you got the shots. So you might be okay to, fight this thing and work it out. And so far, that's what she's done. She's taking it easy. She's fighting it, working it out, dealing with it. But, it's been the experience of the last 3 weeks. So to add on to that experience, if you think mm-hmm. that's enough for, I mean, that's the reason why we didn't have podcasts. But if you think that's enough for me to be dealing with during this 3 weeks, man. Oh boy, I got some more to tell you.
Okay.
Cause the beauty of vehicle ownership, I took my beautiful, lovely Mini in to get an oil change 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
This is right before I got sick. The kid was sick. The wife was kind of starting to get sick. I wasn't sick yet. So I took my, I had scheduled an oil change, and I had to schedule it cause I had to get an oil change at a licensed place that does German cars, specifically that works on BMWs and Minis, because there are specific tools that are necessary to do an oil change on the BMW and Mini motors. The motor in my Mini is the same as what's in various BMWs. And the way that the system is set up, you need to have the right tools and the right training to do it. It's a closed system to the point where like I can't add oil into my car. There's nowhere to add oil into my car. You have to take pieces off to get to where you can add oil into the car. You can't find the oil filter to take the oil filter off. It's hidden behind other shit.
So
like you literally cannot get into it.
I understand part of the struggle with this, which is something that I take a huge I have a huge amount of animosity towards the current state of certain types of vehicles for this specific reason.
Newer vehicles are made specifically so that the common layperson can't work on them anymore. They're also made to last 5 to 10 years and no longer than that. But you have,
yeah.
I mean, if you want, the thing is, if you want to be able to make money on a product, you have to make it so that somebody has to go somewhere else to get the labor done to fix the product, and the product's going to break down within a certain amount of time so that people buy more product. If you make the product in such a way that it doesn't break down and that it lasts for a long time and people can fix it themselves, you don't make any more money.
Yeah, I know so that. I completely understand that. That's where I look.
Oh, it absolutely sucks. I mean,
yeah, I was going to say this has been around. This philosophy has been around. The philosophy of making a product intentionally unreliable has been around for a lot longer than most people realize. But the philosophy of convincing a customer to get the new version of a product, regardless of the condition of the product, has been around for well over 100 years. But the catch that I get with this is, like, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's something I take, like, I don't even know what I can't even think of the word. It's one of the most infuriating things about looking at large scale reliable products like a car or, God damn it, a phone. Like, I just went through, something that this is pretty related. A couple of days ago, I had to go run out to the place that we bought our phones at in order to, because my wife's phone crashed during its update. It went through a update process that crashed the phone entirely, where it went through, it started going through an infinite loop. And because the battery of the phone is permanently embedded into it.
Yeah.
I had to let it go through an infinite loop over and over and over until it shut off, or basically do a factory reset on the phone. Yeah. And I knew that a factory reset was going to make her, like, she had had, and it was a whole fucking ordeal. Like, one of the biggest problems was that she had data that was specific to that phone that was on the phone's, like, memory. That wasn't backed up to an external card, that wasn't backed up to a computer, because nobody thinks about that shit. Nobody thinks about whether or not your photos that you took are backed up to a cloud or whatever. They don't think of that. Like, what's my cloud going to be? If I have a cloud, it's going to be nothing but shitty memes and, like, a couple of pictures of my dog. Like, I don't think about backing that stuff up to the cloud. But then when shit hits the fan, like if your phone crashes, there's nothing that you could do. So I had to go take the phone out to go get factory reset. And we bought these phones. These phones were like, they cost us like $600-$700 for the pair after everything. But
and how long ago did you get them?
2 years ago. Two years.
No. That's the thing is, why do you think that so many of the phone plans were, instead of paying outright for the phone, you pay monthly payments? Why do you think they're 24-month plans? Because your phone is obsolete in 2 years.
Yeah, it becomes obsolete in 2 years. What's really funny is that my phone, both of our phones are the same exact model. My phone got the update fine. And this is the first update I've ever seen where the performance on the phone actually improved. Most updates actually slow them down until they got caught legally for that.
Well, and I'll say this much.
Samsung and Apple, both of them.
That's a good thing that it worked well with your phone. But yeah. I know my dad was, before he recently got a new phone, he had been using a phone and he was complaining about the fact that it was only, you know, it only worked for about 5 hours on one charge and then he'd have to recharge the damn thing. Mm-hmm. And I take a look at it and I can almost feel it start to bulge. I'm like, Dad, this thing's going to blow up on the side of your head at some point or another.
Yeah.
Because I don't put it on the side of my head. I got a Bluetooth. Like, so it's going to blow up in your pocket. I mean, luckily you're not thinking about having kids anymore, so we don't have to worry about it blowing your nards off. But seriously, I don't want to deal with that hospitalization for you. So we finally got him a new phone, but
the part that I have such a problem with is that the intentional manufacturing of parts that are intentionally unreliable just so somebody buys a new product. Why offer the product? This is half the reason why I use my 30-year-old fucking Super Nintendo to play my video games and the PS4 in my living room to watch fucking YouTube. No, and I don't do anything else with it.
That is kind of the way of capitalism, the way that these things are happening with what regulation is in existence.
What sucks is the phrase that, like, I always was like, I remember being younger and always being like annoyed. And like, I would always cringe whenever I hear the phrase, they don't make things like they used to. And now knowing that that's actually the case and the reason is just to make you buy shit makes me even angrier. And I sound so fucking old now to know that that's the case. Like, to complain that about something like this, I feel so old.
Actually, and the funny thing about it is the younger generations than us have accepted this.
That's a part of life. It's a part of life. Collectability is like the only thing that's essentially collectible is legitimate inanimate objects. Anything that has a function, right? Case in point, look at the new. I'm going to go video games again, right? Look at the new PlayStation 5. What does it do? It plays all the old PlayStation 4 games. Yeah. How does it get them? You buy PlayStation 4 games, you take your entire library of older games that you had for your PS4, and then you transfer them digitally to your PS5. Yeah. So you just re-download them. If you purchase them, you re-download them, or you take the disc and it goes, oh, this is a PS4 game. Let's download it. And then that's it. That's all that happens. All of the data is downloaded through updates or what have you. And essentially what you've got on the disc itself is nothing but a coaster with an ID on it. And at that point, now those newer systems, what's going to happen when the PlayStation 6 comes out? It's going to translate those PS5 games you had, possibly drop PS4 compatibility, although we're like the third year into the PS5 and people still won't buy them because they're like, have either been out of stock or just too damn expensive. And because people are refusing to buy PS5s, they're still making and putting out games on PS4. Like, everybody's still making PS4 games because it's useless to do that if you don't have like a 4K television or what have you. It's useless. However,
it's actually easier just to, it's more cost effective for them to make the PS4 game and then have somebody even with a PS5 buy the PS4 game and then be able to get one of the things that PS5 does offer is the availability to scale up some of the PS4 games.
Right.
Once you've loaded them in. So it's less product to make. You get them
for
you
sure.
Have more people getting the PS4s. I only know this because I am lucky enough to have a PS5, although I've literally the only game I've really played much time on it has been the Gran Turismo 7. And the only reason I played a lot of time on that is because in Gran Turismo 7, you can buy and race minis. So,
well, first off, GT7 is a fantastic game. I will give credit where credit's due. GT7 is an amazing game. But that being said, like, what's really funny is they've been selling that part of the product since the PlayStation 2, since the second one. You were able to take PS1 discs, pop them into a PS2, and then upgrade the graphical output. That was part of the deal. What's really funny is I still have a PlayStation 2. You know what we do with our old systems now? One of the least reliable parts of an electronic system is its capacitors are the first thing to go. And if the capacitors leak, fluid on the board, you can fuck up the board, it'll make the board corrode, blah, blah, blah. You can take an original PlayStation or a PS2, open the motherboard up, replace the capacitors in it. I know it sounds like really simple. It's actually a really shitty soldering job. Like, get somebody that knows how to do it just to throw that out there. But if you do that, that thing's going to work just as good as new as the day that you bought the fucking thing. And now people are hacking them. They're throwing hard drives in them with every game in the entire PS2 library. And nobody gives a shit because the only place you could find a PlayStation 2 game is if it's used anyway. They've completely ditched that, aside from the potential possibility that one of the PS2 games might be available digitally on a PS4. But if you don't have a PS4, what are you going to do? That being said, what I find funny is the PlayStation 2 is 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And that shit still kicks hardcore. The fan might be noisy as shit, but it still works. I've got a GameCube. That still works. And this is all stuff that we picked up before the retro gaming boom. Mm-hmm. So the GameCube cost me $15. The PS2 cost me $10. It cost me $10, and I bought them both off of a shelf at a Goodwill 15 years ago.
The GameCube that I have is the original one that I bought when it came out.
Still works, right?
The I haven't played that one in a while, but I believe it still does. I have controller issues, but mm-hmm. you know, that happens.
Yeah, you can get new ones of those, or I bet you can open them up and clean the contacts and you're fine.
The Nintendo 64 that I have was the original Nintendo 64 that I bought with Episode 1 Podracer.
Nice. Did you get the bundle with the Podracer bundle with the box and everything?
With what box?
There was actually a Star Wars
graphics thing.
You mean the expansion pack? No. Yeah. I'm talking about there actually was a system where you could buy the N64 with Podracer in it, like in
yeah,
the
that's
box.
The one I got.
Hell yeah, you got the Podracer package. Those things go for a mint now.
I got that package. I don't have the box for it or anything anymore. Oh. But I got that package, and I got, at the time I bought it at Toys R Us, I got a really cool purple controller that went with it. Sadly, the controller doesn't work anymore.
Is it the clear purple one?
Yes, clear
purple. The atomic purple? Oh, hell yeah.
Without the legs.
Without the legs?
Yeah, it doesn't have the legs on the side. The handle's on the side. It just has a single handle in the middle. I'll send you a picture.
Oh, is it a third party? Oh, I think it's
No. It's a Nintendo one.
What? Oh, yeah. I got to see this shit. I've never heard of that.
I'll send you a picture.
Yeah. Yeah, please.
But I ended up recently picking up two new Nintendo 64 controllers because all my controllers had thumbstick issues with them that I'm not knowledgeable enough to fix them and clean them. I'll have them done one day.
Oh, replacing a stick in those controllers is an absolute nightmare. Yeah. I did it to one. Worst mistake I could have ever made. And I could have just bought a new controller with a better stick in it. That's great.
But I have a Super Nintendo that we've had for I don't even know how long, and we did get it used from somebody. Mm-hmm. Same with the Nintendo that I have; they both still work. And I even have a Sega Dreamcast.
That's funny. I got two of those. I like them so much. I liked one so much. I bought another one just in case the first one burned out because I played it all the time.
Actually, the PS2, I have like two or three of those.
Hell yeah! There you go.
I have a total of three Xbox 360s because for a while there people were selling them for cheap, so I just kept grabbing cheap 360s with mm-hmm. different controllers. The only one we use now is the R2-D2 one.
Nice.
The other two just sit on a shelf. But you know that's. But again, it is the fact that things aren't necessarily built to last like they once were. Cars being a good example of the fact that even you look. Back, you know, think back when we were teenagers in the 90s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you saw classic cars, you saw cars from the 70s, the 60s, the 50s, the 40s.
Yep.
Like if there'd be a car show or something, right?
Yep.
Okay. So we're now what 20, 30 years in the future from that, from the 90s?
Yeah.
And when you go to a classic car show, you still see cars from the 70s, the 60s, the 50s.
Oh, hell
the
40s. Yeah.
Do you see cars from the 80s and 90s?
Fuck no. Fuck no. And those are the cars. Those are the main cars I own. I have a 89 S10 Blazer. I used to have an 88 Thunderbird. Like it was, and those technically should be like the classic cars of this era. Right.
Except they were made in the 80s when they started making them not to last. So they fall apart in the garbage.
It depends on the manufacturer that you're working with. Like if you go with, I will tell
Toyota.
You. I was going to say, Toyota or Honda, like,
as long as you don't
go
got
Japanese
one of the
with your manufacturer,
with
those fuckers won't die. And I'm surprised that my Chevy hasn't died yet. Still to this day, still runs. And I don't mean just turns on and goes. I mean, it runs well.
I think there was some kind of, spell put on that thing by somebody. I don't know. There's some voodoo shit going on with that thing to keep it alive.
I don't know how.
I don't know if it's actually alive. I think it may be an undead car.
Hey, look, man, my wife has this capability of keeping animals alive way past their life expectancy. Like maybe that's what happens with cars with me because this shit, like these cars are falling apart. The ones I have. Both of the cars that we're talking about right now look like absolute trash on the outside and sound worse. If you see, there is the most horrendous squeak in the Chevy that I have in the S10. the suspension is squeaking like a son of a bitch, and I've never been able to find and pinpoint the exact spot. I need to get underneath it to actually grease those springs. It's the suspension springs. But at the same time, it's such a characteristic, and so when you see it drive across, it's all like, it looks so scary. It looks like it's going to literally, the axle is just going to fall apart underneath it at any point. It just still doesn't.
Dude, 15 years ago, I was terrified of that vehicle, and I never rode in it. if it was ever offered for me to ride in it, I figured out some kind of an excuse to not get in that thing. Nowadays, I would not. There's no way in hell I would get in that thing. But, yeah, again, they're not made. These things aren't made to last. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and they're not. They're also not made for the common person to be able to work on them again. But I want to say, if people are thinking I'm bitching about my Mini, that I'm bitching because I can't do my own oil change on my Mini. I don't want to fucking do my oil change. I knew when I bought it that I would need to find auto shops that worked on either Minis or BMWs, that worked on German cars. I knew that would be a necessity. So I didn't go into this not understanding, and now I'm so sad because I gotta do this. And I knew that it would cost me about $100-$120 to get an oil change every time I got an oil change.
Yeah, but it could cost you $250 to get it from a dealer.
Actually, that is a dealer price.
Wow, that's stupid.
That is the dealer price. It was about $120 to get the oil change done.
Oh my god.
And there's specific oil that needs to be put in them because of the way that the engines are manufactured. Again, all that through the dealer. Here's the upside, though. You only have to change the oil on the thing every 9,000 miles. Or once a year. So that's
really
nice. Yeah.
Okay, that's not bad.
And that's the manufacturer recommendation. That's Mini saying you only have to change every 9,000 miles or once a year.
What happens when it gets past that 5-year aging spot?
What do you mean?
Like, once it gets past that 5 years, what does it do then?
That's a good question, because my car is a 2016, so it's past the 5-year.
Yeah.
And so what happens when it's past the 5-year, and they do the oil change, and they do, you know, the inspection on things, they come back with the standard stuff. You have issues with some of your tires. All right. Fine. You know, you always expect that whenever you take your car to a dealership and have it look for anything, they're always going to tell you there's something wrong with your tires.
Yeah, of course.
And my front tires had an issue, and the issue was evident to another problem. The front tires had wearing on, the tread was still fine, but they had a lot of wear on the inside lip of both tires, both front tires.
Hmm.
What does that indicate to you?
That means that the suspension, that means that the front, that means the front axle is turned, the tires are tilted, inward to the top.
So to make it just
your alignment is off. Your alignment is
there
off.
There we go.
Tilted to the
that's
inward,
what
to
I was
top.
Looking
yeah.
for. Just the easy answer, which is something's wrong with your.
Sorry,
alignment.
I went down into detail. Welcome to ADHD. Sorry. Like, you asked me practically a geometrical question.
So I needed a front end alignment, and I needed two new front tires. But the tread was good still on the back tires. They were all in good shape.
Perfect.
But it's a front wheel drive car too, so you want to make sure to get those front wheels checked because they're the drive tires. They're the ones that are getting the torque on them. So, you know, okay, but I'm not paying the price that they want to charge to take care of this thing. Also, they wanted me to put the run flat tires on the car, which run flat tires basically have a stronger sidewall. Mm-hmm. So if it goes flat, the sidewall will keep you up. But they are really uncomfortable to ride on. They also like 3 times as much as regular tires. And I'm lucky enough that I have 18-inch rims on my car. So finding tire sizes is not necessarily simple with this thing because it's got the low profile tires because it's got a giant fucking rim.
Dude, I feel your pain on that one. The other car that I have, I own 3 cars. All of them are very used and all of them are actually very old. Like at the minimum, they're 20 years old a piece. And one of the cars we had gotten when we had bought it, we liked everything about the car except for the goddamn wheels. Like, it has freaking 23s on it, and it's a Ford. It makes no sense to have those fucking tires on it. We feel every goddamn rock, and we're in an SUV. That is impossible. Okay.
Thank you for making it clear that you had 23s on an SUV, because people may have been thinking like 23s. What kind of damn car they got 23s
on? 23s
on? They got
on a Honda
Pitmobile or something?
What is it? Is it a Camry? What do you got? 23s on your S10? No. We have an SUV and it's got 23s on it, and I hate them to death. They're the worst fucking tires I've ever had on a car. I just want stock rims on this thing. I just want stock rims so that I don't feel every rock on the highway, because that's what I feel. And on top of that, because they're 23s, the tires are specialty tires, so I have to pay a stupid amount of money for every time I change my tires out, and sometimes I have to do it every year because they wear out so fucking fast.
Well, it's stupid. I can say luckily that I did get tires replaced. Actually, this week I did get tires replaced and a front end alignment done. And because of the fact that 18-inch rims are becoming more popular on small cars, this tire size actually is a pretty normal tire size and wasn't very expensive. I think I paid less than $350 for the front end alignment and the two tires.
Oh my God, I hate you.
Yeah, so that was not so bad.
I paid $850 for mine. I paid $850 for having to get four new tires for the 23s. I paid $850, and that was for cheap Chinese off-brand tires.
Admittedly, I did get inexpensive tires for the front. I only got like 40,000 mile tires for the front because the back were still in good shape and I wasn't going to replace the back. But by going for the less expensive, lower mileage tires in the front, by the time they wear out, the back ones should probably be close to wearing out.
Yeah.
Or by the time the back ones wear out, there'll be a lot more wear on the front ones.
Yeah.
So when I go to replace all four of them, I'm not going to feel as bad because I only spent a very small amount on the front too.
That's fair.
But I did that at a tire place this week after I got my car back. But getting my car, the car situation, though.
Again, all this for an oil change, man.
There's more to this. You expect that they're going to try to attack on services. The services that you don't expect, they're going to try to attack on. You asked about what happens after 5 years. Let me tell you what happens after 5 years. Certain parts start going out on these new cars, specifically really important parts like motor mounts.
Oh, no.
And I ended up with two bad motor mounts. Now, here's something funny, and this, admittedly, this is just some speculation and hyperbole, and I'm not going to name the name of the place that I got my car at and got my wife's car at. But we both got our vehicles from the same place. It is a company that sells used vehicles and is typically helpful with people that have are rebuilding credit or don't have perfectly great credit when it comes to buying used vehicles. And they offer their own in-house warranty program that you can use at anywhere where there's, or most near where there's certified mechanics. We were able to get the warranty program for my wife's car. We weren't able to get it for mine because of what happened the night of getting my car. All of the debacle revolved around that. So we weren't able to get that warranty. I got a separate warranty myself for my car. My wife's car, about 6 months ago, she had some issues with it, took it into a place to get it fixed that the warranty covered paying for stuff, and she had a motor mount issue. And the warranty through the warranty she had, which is through the dealership, but again, can be taken, you can take the car to multiple places to be fixed. They paid for that motor mount issue with no problem, but she had a motor mount issue with her car. Again, okay. I bought my car from the same place. My car had motor mount issues, specifically two motor mounts that were damaged. Mm. So this seemed a little questionable that both the cars we got from this place had motor mount issues. Now, again, her warranty through that company covered it without a problem. No question covered. We've had, I think, $10,000 worth of work done on her car from accidentally frying the computer system, and they paid for that, which was close to $5,000 just for the computer system. Because it fried the computer system and fried the battery when it was frying the computer system. They fixed all of that, and that was about $5,000 worth of work. And then when the motor mount and a couple other things that went wrong that the warranty paid for, almost $10,000 worth of work has been paid for on her vehicle to fix it up. And it's a 12, 13-year-old vehicle. So, it's going to have problems after that much time. Mine's, 6, 7 years old. And, I got two motor mounts with problems. I got another thing that was a seal problem, and the seal problem wasn't too expensive. I had a brake light that I know had gone out, and it's not something that's easy to change for the brake light on one of those. But adding all the pieces up that needed to be fixed came to about $2,400.
Yeesh.
And half of that was one of the motor mounts. So I call up my warranty place. yeah, I call up my warranty place and I'm like, hey guys, you know, I got a warranty with you guys. Are you going to fix this? What's up? It takes them over a week to even send out somebody for an inspection on the vehicle.
What?
And then 5 days later to finally tell me and the dealership, no, we're not going to fix any of these things. So I had to figure out how to get it paid for, got a few loans and whatnot, and was able to get it paid for because I needed to get it paid for. I don't have that much cash on me to be able to do it. And I got it paid for, got my car fixed. Fun part, fun little thing, is I did get a loaner car from the Mini dealership. They loaned me a 2023 standard Mini, so not the Clubman like I have with the four doors. This is just a two-door Mini. But it was the S model, so it's got the kind of juiced up, it's got the turbo in it. Brand spanky new car. Brand spanky new. It had 700 miles on it.
Whoa.
That's how new this thing was.
Okay.
Let me tell you something. It was a lot of fun to drive. Oh, it was zippy all over the place, and it's a little tiny thing, so I'm zipping in and out of everything. Ride absolutely beautifully, but it did make me love my car even more, specifically because my car has a lot more room. Even sitting in the driver's seat, I felt like I was in a tight cocoon in this little tiny thing. It's great. It's a lot of fun, but it definitely told me I don't want any smaller version of Mini than what I have. The Clubman is the thing for me, but I got my car back. I did after 2.5 weeks of waiting for a damn warranty company. Make me wonder if I it's a warranty that luckily I didn't pay all of it ahead of time. I'm paying monthly on the warranty. I'm curious if I want to keep the warranty or not. I'm still deciding if I want to keep it because, like, I get that their argument was this is normal wear and tear for motor mounts to be damaged. Shouldn't be. But again, it makes me wonder if that dealership has an issue with checking motor mounts. And their personal warranty system will just take care of those things to cover their ass. Never know.
Wow.
But my car is fixed. My car is nice. I got it back. Here's the real downside, though. I got this really awesome, zippy little car, right? And it's not even my car, so, I mean, I got to worry about the fact that my insurance is covering it, so I don't want to do anything too stupid.
Yeah.
But damn, I got a fun car that I can just rev and race all over the place, right?
Right.
Except I have this car during the two and a half, 3 weeks where we are all sick. So I'm not going anywhere. I'm not driving into work. I'm working from home the entire time. Because literally 2 days later that we find out that the 2 days after no. I get this car that we find out that the wife has COVID.
No, dude.
So yeah.
Oh,
and then to add insult to injury during all this COVID time. So I got this beautiful car and just sits in front of my house. I do a couple of trips to the grocery store for grocery pickup, not going into the store because we're trying not to go in, but we still need stuff. So I do a couple of trips with grocery pickup, but that's all I get to do with this damn thing. That's it. It's like, motherfucker.
I'm sorry. That sucks.
And of course, to add insult to injury, that's the extra add to that.
Okay.
Is this is all happening. So it's actually before she got completely diagnosed. This is all happening. Like 2 or 3 days before the NFC Championship game.
Okay.
Now, I know you're not a big football person.
I know.
But this is true. You go to the NFC Championship game, and I'm already, you know, where all this crazy stuff is happening. People are sick in the household. My car's in the shop waiting to see if this place is going to pay for everything. Cause this is right when my car's in the shop. I got this other car. I haven't had a chance to go anywhere and do anything yet. We don't go on our Saturday night out time because everybody's feeling sick. You know, again, we don't know. So this is at the point before we know that it's COVID. We just know we're all sick. So right. We don't go out, which would have been fun in that little tiny cool car to take the wife out and, you know, zip her around and scare the crap out of her. But no, we don't get the opportunity for that. You get the NFC Championship game, like maybe something good is going to come of all this. Everybody's been sick this week. My car's in the shop. God, I need something good. And like 2 or 3 offensive plays into the game for the San Francisco 49ers, and the freaking Eagles defense breaks our quarterback. Literally fucking breaks our quarterback. And so
I did hear about this stuff. Like, everybody on my social was talking about that shit.
Our fourth string quarterback comes in, and we're still staying competitive in the game, and they fucking break that quarterback too.
Oh.
They get him removed from the game with a fucking concussion. So the other quarterback, who's been trying to get his arm to work, comes back in the game, and basically he can only throw like 5 feet, and he has to try to hand off the rest of the game. There's no chance. There's no competition. The 49ers offense can't do anything. So the Eagles end up winning the game. Although I maintain, just like every 49er fan and a lot of the football pundits, I could have been completely okay with the Eagles beating us if we had had the chance to compete and they were able to prove they were the better team. We didn't get a chance to compete. We didn't get a chance to really play because they broke our fucking quarterback. And they broke him so bad he literally has a torn ligament that has to undergo surgery.
Yep. Yep.
He still tried to throw the ball with a torn freaking ligament.
Yeah, that's why he backed. I heard about this. That's why he backed out. He said, "Dude, my arm feels like it's made out of rubber. I got nothing, no fling to it." So they're like, "Okay, fine." And I guess the way that he throws the ligament, well, it wasn't the way he threw because it was impact. God, if somebody caught him in the arm, right, was what it was.
As his arm was coming forward, he got somebody smacked. Basically, they chopped at his arm, and it
tore the ligament.
It tore the ligament, rebounded his arm.
Oh my God! So, I heard about this. This ligament tear is actually very common in pitchers, baseball pitchers. And it happens to be that a lot of the time when you get the replacement, when you get the proper surgery and it's done right, a pitcher actually has the capability of throwing faster because of the limited range of motion of the tendon. It actually tightens up and allows you to fling. The problem is that doesn't work that way with a fucking football.
I'm going to clarify. First of all, yes, it can work that way with a football.
Really?
But I'm going to clarify. There are multiple types of tears that happen with this tendon, mm-hmm. this ligament, tendon, mm-hmm. whatever. There's multiple types of tears that happen with it. Typically, the ones that happen with pitchers are after they've been throwing for a long time. They've been pitching for a long time. And it's more of a stress-related thing, and it's a full tear. And then they have to have... when they go in for the surgery, there's basically... If they need surgery, if it's torn enough, they need surgery. Sometimes you can just rehab it and it'll heal back up if it's not fully torn. His is fully torn. Brock Purdy's is fully torn. They won't know for sure how bad it is until they open him up on next Wednesday, because that's when he's going in for surgery, is on the 22nd. They won't know how bad it is. There are three possibilities. Possibility number one is a standard repair. Just being able to repair the tendon, that depends on how bad the tear is.
Mm-hmm.
So possibility number two is what's called the reconstruction, where they actually have to get a tendon from another part of the body or a cadaver tendon or something else and basically remake the entire tendon because it's torn and fried and too far gone. That's typically what the pitchers end up with because it's a non-contact injury. It ends up being that tendon just ends up frying and destroying itself.
Oh my God.
The repeated usage.
Yeah.
This is different because it's a contact injury thing. So it most likely won't be that. That specific reconstruction style where they have to put in a whole new tendon and reconstruct the tendon is what's called a Tommy John surgery. Now, there's a hybrid version. It's either after the doctor or after the guy who got the surgery for the first time.
Right.
I don't remember what the Tommy John part of it is, but that's what it's called, a Tommy John surgery. The other way to do it is if it's just a repair, they can do a repair and put a brace in that will actually strengthen the tendon. In the brace situation and in the Tommy John surgery, that's when you typically get more torque on the arm. Mm. And it more so with baseball, but even with football, it can provide more torque and more power to the throws. And so they won't know for sure which type of surgery they have to do. They're pretty sure at this point it's probably not going to have to be the Tommy John, just because that's usually more of an injury of repetitive motion and non-contact, whereas this was very specifically a contact injury. So they're hoping it's a clean tear as opposed to the frayed type of tear that happens when it's the non-contact injury. But and that also means that he could be back to throwing within 6 months' time.
Wow!
But still, he has the Tommy John. It's over a year. But still, the point of it is they broke our fucking quarterback.
Yeah.
But here's the best thing. Then you have the Super Bowl. A bunch of awesome commercials in the Super Bowl, specifically the trailers, the teaser trailers for Guardians of the Galaxy 3. And finally, the Flash movie is actually going to come out. Despite all the stupidity of Ezra Miller, it is going to come out. And oh my God. The things that are happening in the Flash movie. Holy shit.
So yeah, I have watched that trailer like multiple fucking times, and all the little Easter eggs and shit in there is crazy. What I don't know they're going to do is how are they going to set this up? Like, I love the twists that they put on things. I love it. I love the twist they put on it. They lightened it up just enough to hit the whole mass audience type thing. To do an interesting twist on the Flashpoint backstory. So far from what I've seen, I think it's fucking great. But what I'm concerned about is how are they going to put this movie out and not address the Ezra Miller issues? Like, how are it's not that they're not addressing them. I don't necessarily mean that
I think that what they'll end up doing is running out all the other stars, and especially the newest star of the movie.
Uh-huh.
The young lady who's going to be the newest star of the movie. I think they're going to be running those people out. They'll do a big campaign with the media campaign with Michael Keaton and with this new young actress.
Sasha Cal is her name.
Yes, I think they'll do the big media stuff with the two of them, and just leave Ezra Miller out of all the media stuff and just push it despite him. And then, you know, we don't know. The thing is, we don't know what is going to happen to Flash at the end of this. Typically, at the end of any of the multiple times that a Flashpoint type thing has been used in the comics,
mm-hmm.
somebody big dies. As a result. And whenever the new universe gets reordered, somebody big is dead for basically good until another Flashpoint comes. That may be the way that they handle the situation, is just speculation on my part that maybe one of the Barry Allens survives, but maybe there's no Flash anymore.
I don't know. Yeah. I am speculating. I think being able to speculate and theorize on that stuff is going to be fun as hell up until the movie comes out. Like, really, 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 really fun. The little bits and pieces and the extra stuff they're going to give out, which probably isn't going to be very much. They're probably going to hold it as close to the chest as Nintendo's holding the Zelda franchise right now. But I think they're really going to... I think it's going to be really fun to kind of, like, you know, speculate and theorize around all that kind of shit. Especially with the little Easter eggs. Dude, like... I guess spoiler warning for a fucking trailer, but the fact that they brought it, I know there's a lot of clues in it that allude to that the movie takes place 10 years in the past. And that they're timing it in with the return of with the quote unquote return of Zod, where this is supposedly the arrival of Zod in this universe, and there is no Superman to stop him. Like, that's like one of the major plot points of it that I think is badass to work around. So, like, at that point, you literally can invent the entire universe and use completely different people.
Well, and that's part of maybe what's going on with both with this and with the Marvel Cinematic Universe at this moment in time. I think you're seeing both of them use what has been used multiple times and is comic book accurate. These multiverse events that completely reorder the characters and the heroes and start new stories and have new versions of them, where you can have different casting for all the different people. And DC's doing it sooner, mainly because sadly their live action cinematic stuff has not quite hit and worked in the same way as we've discussed on here before. Their animated version, their various animated universes, that's where DC shines.
Yeah.
Their animated shit is on point.
Dude, absolutely.
And admittedly, like you were saying, this is much more of a family-friendly version of Flashpoint as opposed to some of the other versions of Flashpoint. I mean, the one that they got at least, I'd say, 60% of the stuff from the comics in the one animated Flashpoint that was fairly recent, you know, mm-hmm. within the last 10 years.
Yeah.
They got about 60%. They didn't go into the whole Martha Wayne Joker. They did go into at least the Thomas Wayne Batman.
Yeah.
They didn't delve into the Joker. Yeah,
they made that kind of a bit of a byline. It's like, hey, this exists too
didn't go to the depth.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
But they did go to the depth of having the Atlanteans and the Amazons at war over basically the entire continental Europe.
Yep.
And the two of them just absolutely brutalizing the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
They did do, you know, there's a bunch of things that they did bring in from that specific comic Flashpoint, and it was brutal ass cartoon.
I think my favorite twist on a character that they put in the film, the way that they represented it properly, was the version of Superman that they put in. I thought that was so just sad. In that
animated Flashpoint?
Yeah, in animated Flashpoint, it was so tragic, dude. Like, that, the fact that, you know, the government finds him and he has no idea how society works or anything. He barely speaks, like, with a mentality above maybe a six-year-old, and he just has had no idea what... He's got this very Lenny of Mice and Men meets Frankenstein type innocence to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where he's practically a god, but he's a child at the same time. And he doesn't understand so much about how the society works. Like, he learns, like, he becomes infuriated by learning the inhumanity of humanity in minutes, and it's so fucking sad. And I'm curious if they're going to, it doesn't look like they're going to, the way that it's introduced
this is going to be a softer version of that.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to really do that. If they do, there might be some in jokes and shit like that. Little cutesy things, but I hope to some degree there is some level of that tragic innocence that's put in. Because I think that is something that is a major development to whoever the most powerful metahuman in the DC universe in that universe would be. You know what I mean? Like, I'm hoping that depth of character will be allotted to Supergirl in this.
Well,
and trailer spoilers, I guess, you know what I mean? Like, it's just speculation and hope, but.
And it does add depth to what is otherwise, let's face it, with Superman being, one of the two kind of, hallmark torch carrying characters for the DC universe. He really is, for the most part, a fairly bland and boring character with very little what normal people would consider character development. There's not much to develop with him because he is inherently just a good guy.
Yeah.
There is no moral conflict with him ever. It's just, he's just good. And so anything that adds a little depth to the character.
Yeah. Well, to a degree, like, I think he started like that, but are you talking about Superman in general?
Just yes, in general. I know that there have been more than enough areas where things have
They've explored that in more recent times, but for the longest time he was just Truth, Justice, and the American Way or whatever. Like, that was just his thing. He was a plank of wood with superpowers for the longest time.
And that's just it. Literally, one of the most boring characters. Honestly, though, I say that because that's what's, you know, that's kind of what is viewed of it. But I've always liked him in the sense that the one thing you can for the most continuity of Superman, the one thing you can say about him is that guy is the one that's not morally shady. That's the guy that's right. That's the guy that you really can look up to because he really is the good guy. Many of the other heroes, I'm not necessarily overly fond of anti-heroes all the time because I like to know that I like my good guys to be good and my bad guys to be bad. And there may be shady people in the middle, that's fine, but I still want to be able to identify who my good guys are and who my bad guys are.
Right.
I'm just specific like that. But anyway.
And I like when they explore that moral compass to certain parts and pieces of Extremity, and you have to do that with multiple universes. But I do like the fact that they took the idea of the fact that he has, like, his moral compass is based upon his own capabilities, which are essentially limitless to this world. He could destroy the entire planet if he wanted to, but he doesn't do that because because he has a moral compass. He knows what wrong, he knows the clear line delineations between wrong and right. He understands what letting people do what they will to a certain degree versus letting them really hurt other people on a grand scale. Like, he knows that, but he is also, in that conflict has become the, between the conflict and, between his own, his own personal conflict and the social conflict that comes with his character, he becomes a poster child for empathy and a poster child against xenophobia at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to explore with him. If you don't explore that, you do a great disservice to the character. You do a great disservice to who they are in that universe, no matter who would be that. I want to see, like, that is one of the biggest things that was, it wasn't even overlooked. I don't think it was overlooked. It became part of the forefront with the Snyder films that were being done.
I was going to say that.
He was genius at that. That was the one thing I could have ever asked for with Superman. He finally fucking did it. And I am so glad that was done. That was the story. That's super. The Justice League film from Man of Steel all the way through the Justice League film, that is Superman's story. Hands down, it's him. That's the Superman trilogy of essentially what would have been known of as the DCEU.
Well, and I do believe that Man of Steel gets the bad rap because it's literally an immigrant's tale. This is an immigrant coming to the United States and trying to fit in and being seen as the monster until he has to prove himself as the savior. And even then, they don't completely trust him. And that's I've always loved what was started with Man of Steel, and I like what was attempted with Batman versus Superman and the Snyder cut of Justice League so much better in what you saw the story he was trying to build and how he was trying to eventually get it to go just dark enough to be able to rein it back in with still a good ending, but to leave you at least for a little while feeling bleak and wondering how everything was going to work out. And so I'm very sad that it didn't work out, that he kept with it, because I thought that this was the building of it. This Flash movie gives an opportunity to kind of flip the script and then see what will happen. And again, mm-hmm. as I mentioned before, Marvel is using kind of the same thing, knowing that they've run the gamut of the story with the Avengers and run the gamut with the actors they have playing the various characters. Now they are looking at bringing in younger generation stuff, shifting things up, changing up some of the Universal stuff to where they can, one, bring in all the properties that Disney and Marvel Film Studios acquired through the buyouts of Fox and Sony. They're using comic appropriate tropes to be able to change all of this, and both of them are doing it. And it's brilliant to see both DC and Marvel doing this. They're using comic appropriate tropes to change up the lineups, change up the way that things are working so that they can keep telling these stories in different ways and acknowledge that there are different universes of these things. And I'm perfectly okay with seeing different versions and different actors playing some of the different roles if you are able to identify that this is not this universe at a different timeline. They are separate universes. Like, I love the idea of the Robert Pattinson Batman movie. which is it was a long movie, but and not really a Batman movie, but it's okay because it can exist in its own separate universe from the Dark Knight trilogy, and yeah. that can exist in its own separate universe from the Batfleck version of Batman. And as we're going to see in The Flash, the Michael Keaton universe is its own universe of Batman. So we can imagine that Batman Forever and Batman and Robin are their own thing. Although I'm of the firm belief, I heard a theory once, and I like this theory, that Batman Forever and Batman and Robin are actually films in the Batman and Batman Returns universe. These are Batman films that were made in that universe, and they hired
Alfred as an actor for the films.
Maybe not Alfred, but they definitely hired Commissioner Gordon.
Oh yeah, no, it's the same actor that played Alfred in all four films.
I know it is the same guy. I'm just saying maybe they just got somebody that looked a little bit like Alfred.
Yeah.
But they definitely got Commissioner Gordon to be in the two movies.
You know? Oh yeah, think about it. Like if that were the case, like Bruce wouldn't let Alfred do that because it hits too close to home.
Or
it was never even known, like
maybe Bruce does have Alfred do it. Alfred goes there undercover to make sure that they don't hit too close to home.
Right.
With things.
Oh my God. That's great.
Yeah. I've heard that as a theory and I'm like, that's a funny theory.
I love it. I like that.
But anyway,
I like that idea.
Anyway, that was, you know, back to the Super Bowl, though. Watch the Super Bowl. Get the enjoyment of watching the Eagles get had in the Super Bowl. And I mean, I don't like the Chiefs. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a fan of the Chiefs. But at that point, I was really pissed at the Eagles for breaking my damn quarterback because I'm of the firm belief that we would have been able to compete. We might have, the Niners might have been able to win. I'm not saying they would have won, but they sure would have made it a hell of a game instead of the just sad affair that it was, not being able to really do anything on offense because you don't have a quarterback who can throw the ball. I could throw further than Brock Purdy could on that day with his arm injured. So it was pathetic to watch because what do you do when you can't compete?
Yeah.
Again, let us lose the game because you're a better team. I could have been okay with that. I wouldn't have really bitched and complained about it. Cause again, I would have been glad that we lost the NFC Championship game instead of losing the Super Bowl. Much rather lose an NFC Championship than lose a Super Bowl again. We've done that twice. It pisses me off. Don't want to have it happen again. If we're going to go to the damn Super Bowl, we need to win that shit.
Fair.
But you know, again, just, You want your team to have the chance to compete, and that chance is robbed from them.
Yeah.
But interesting statistic.
Yes.
Every team that the 49ers played this year, right? If they had a game the next week, the very next week, they lost the game the next week. Now, there was a bye week between the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
There was a bye week. Didn't matter. Philadelphia Eagles still lost after playing the 49ers.
I didn't even follow like the game at all. I don't know who won or lost. So
yeah, the Eagles lost. The Chiefs won. The Eagles lost. They didn't have a week off, but it didn't matter because again, for the regular season, every opponent that the 49ers faced the very next week, they lost their game. It's never happened before in the NFL. Never happened before. But they did have one opponent during the regular season that they played. That opponent had a bye week, so they had a week off. The next week when they played, they did win their game, which is why I specifically said the thing that happened was if a team played the Niners the next week when they played, they lost. If they played the very next week, they lost. One team played them, had a bye week, won their game. It was the only team that won after playing the Niners, but again, they had a week off, so they were able to do it. They were able to get rested and not be beat up from it. Do you know what team that was?
No.
It was also, might I add, the last team that the 49ers had lost to until the NFC Championship game. They had lost that game, and they won all the rest of their games up to the NFC Championship game.
Oh, wow.
And undefeated during that period of time. The last team that the Niners lost to, before that, the only team to be able to play their next game, regardless of when it was, the next game after the 49ers and win their next game was the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, that's funny, dude. Oh, that's great.
So, I mean, just saying. The upside is we should have Brock Purdy back at some point next year. We'll also have Trey Lance back apparently at full health. So we'll see what happens as far as the quarterback competition is going to go. Jimmy Garoppolo is most likely gone. And that's kind of okay because Brock Purdy stepped in and was able to play way better than Jimmy Garoppolo with no experience whatsoever, at least as far as on the pro level. So basically what Jimmy Garoppolo got to see is his chances with the 49ers become expendable because Brock Purdy can do it and is paid way less than what Jimmy Garoppolo is paid. And is way younger. And up until they broke him, he was way less injury prone. So all that happening within this 3-week span while COVID ravaged my house. But I'm okay. I'm coming out the other side of
it. You doing all right?
I'm looking at all the positives. I got my car back. Now that two motor mounts have been replaced, guess what? It gets better mileage, and it drives a lot better.
Good.
Makes sense with motor mounts replaced. And yeah. Then when I got the tires replaced, drives even better. You know, alignment fixed, tires replaced, drives even better. So I'm super happy, especially considering that by the next Saturday from today, so like, you know, 8 days from today, something like that, 9 days from today.
No.
Something like that. Maybe it'll be next Sunday. But anyway, about 9 days from today will be the 1 year anniversary of when I got my car.
Oh, wow.
Went through all the craziness of getting the car. So the month of February is just a crazy month, especially considering, I mean, I can say in my own life, so many crazy things have happened to me in February's for many, many years. I mean, there have been people dying. That's happened last year. Somebody died in February. 11 years ago, somebody died in February. There have been, the sickness always seems to hit in February. Again, the crazy car thing happened in February. So February is a very fraught month. You know what I mean? Fraught, I tell you. But we're going to see the end of it. Also, you know what else happened in February 4 years ago? We started the podcast 4 years ago in February.
Wow. Holy shit. Four years ago
we started this podcast. And you know what we have to show for it?
What's that?
Like 3 listeners.
3 regulars, man.
But that's okay.
Hey, thanks to all of you guys, though. Really.
Really. We do thank you.
I think, honestly, unless those 3 people are listening, 100 times a piece, when I always check the site, when I'm ready for an upload, when I always check the site, here, I'll do it right now. There's like this, I don't know where they come from, but there's this huge, just freaking bomb of listens that comes in. Okay, now, so there's a bomb of 220 listens that showed up close to a month ago now, 3 weeks ago, January 19th was it? But that was close to the last time we had actually done an episode.
Makes sense.
Wow. What's really okay, I'll just mention this now. I don't know what the time, the amount of time the listen was, but the episode from November, when YouTubers don't know movie trivia, is what we called it, for some reason got a huge boost of 222 listens in January. Nice. That 220 was for a single episode, and I don't know where these listens are coming from. That's the only one that has that huge amount of listens. Well, there's other ones. Let's see. Finally talk about Obi-Wan. Mike confronts his inner hipster. The Secret of the Plate, Not Your Regular Surf and Turf. There's a couple of episodes that have gotten huge, just booms of listens, and they're singular episodes, so I don't know where they're coming from.
We only have 41 subscribers.
That's on the
on YouTube.
That's on, well, this may not be on YouTube. This could be coming from other sources. We're everywhere.
We're everywhere. interestingly, I did over this break, one of the things I did do is finally get my wife hooked on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, a show I've tried to get her to watch for years now, only because it takes what I like, sitcoms, and kind of pairs it a little bit with what she likes, police procedurals. You'd think it'd be a perfect show for us. It just took her a little while to get into it. I think she has an Andy Samberg issue. She doesn't really like him.
I can understand that.
She had to work her way through that. But I also checked out a different show, Only Murders in the Building. Steve Martin.
Yeah. Selena Gomez.
Yeah, it was a little bit difficult to watch because they're fans of true crime podcasts, and then they do a true crime podcast. And so it was a little difficult watching them do the podcast parts. I had to think, are we that annoying?
Probably. I don't fucking know.
Yeah. But anyway. So that is what happened during this hiatus time to me. And the reason why I can say exclusively, you know, depending on what happens, sometimes it's because of things that Mike has going on that we take a week off. Sometimes it's because of things that I have going on that we take a week off. This was 3 weeks of James needing time off because everybody was sick. And it was crazy.
Little nuts.
Yeah, and a lot of fast food picked up from drive-thrus by the sister-in-law because nobody felt like cooking anything. Let me add, by the way, the sister-in-law who lives in the garage.
Yeah,
like a troll person. Did not get sick the entire time.
Oh, that's funny. Oh my god,
get sick the entire time.
That's it. That's it.
I mean, she avoided the shit out of all of us, but she did not get sick the whole time.
Dude, I'm telling you, that's how my wife didn't get sick. I stayed the fuck away from her the entire time, and she didn't get sick.
I would do that, except I'd say, what, 7-8 months ago, my wife made the decision to remove the couch that we had in the living room.
Oh, God.
And she got rid of the couch because she had found one of those couches that are like two recliners with like a thing in the middle that, you know, a shoulder rest in the middle where it pops up and it's got,
you know, the drink holders and those are great
and
couches.
Both sides are recliners, right?
Yeah.
So she took the couch out of the front room.
Shit.
So if I was going to isolate her in the bedroom, right? Keep her isolated in the bedroom,
mm-hmm.
Which she can only do for certain points of the day because I do have to work. So she does have to, you know, keep an eye on the kids for different times of the day and whatnot, so I can actually work. I mean, I could help to some extent because my office is here, you know, where I can see kids and hear them and whatnot. But like, I also have to work, so she has to be able to like make food for them and, you know, keep an eye on them.
You're gonna isolate her in the bedroom? What were you gonna do? Take that old couch and block the door with it?
No. If she's isolated in the bedroom, right? So that, yeah, she can be in the bedroom and sleep in the bedroom and all that. Where am I supposed to sleep?
I mean,
if we had a couch, I would sleep on the couch. But we don't have a couch. So where am I supposed to sleep?
I don't know what to say, man. Is there a couch or a comfy little chair up in the attic where you're at?
Well, loft, not attic.
Loft.
There's a couple of recliners, but I can't sleep in a recliner.
Oh.
I can't sleep on my back. I have to be on my side. It's really hard to lay on your side in a recliner.
Fair.
I mean, I guess I could try to curl up on the dog bed on the floor. that'd be about my only option because there's no couch anymore. So I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of choice. I kind of had to sleep in the bed. I thought I was okay because for the first, here's the fun part. I thought I was okay the first couple of nights that she was sick. You know, the first week or so that she was sick, I thought I'd be fine sleeping in the same bed as her. You know why? She was wearing the mask, the CPAP mask. So I figured I had less chance of contamination with the CPAP mask. And I probably did have less chance of contamination. The problem was she had more chance of decontamination.
Oh, no.
Double-edged blade there. But anyway. Yep. That's anyway, I said we are outside of the outside of all that, feeling good again, and so hopefully we can resume back to our once a week podcast format, have fun information. I can share that I did get to pick up a few more records that I don't think we got to talk about on here during this time.
Oh,
I don't think did we talk about the Tool records?
Not on the podcast. No, you sent me pictures and we were supposed to, and then things happened.
And we didn't talk about the Avenged Sevenfold ones.
Nope, didn't talk about those either. You showed me those ones.
Yep, all hard to find ones, all beautiful ones, all ones that I snagged and basically spent my next 6 months worth of vinyl buying budget all in one go because I found everything I wanted and didn't want to lose out on it. So I don't get to buy vinyl again until July.
Boo.
I mean, I can. If I really, really want to, I can. But I'm going to be good and not because I gave myself a price limit of what I could spend each month on vinyl. And I spent 6 months worth in one big go. So I need to be good and not buy vinyl and keep myself limited because I'm a grown ass adult and I can control my impulses and urges.
Well, at least I guess that makes one of us.
We'll see. We'll see how long it lasts. Keep in mind, since I bought all of that stuff, I've spent 3 weeks at home not being able to go anywhere and do anything and spend any money anywhere because I've been sick. Guess what? That is fading. So who knows what kind of control is going to happen over the next few weeks. Probably not enough. Anyway, Mike.
Yes.
Where can people listen to us next week and hopefully many weeks after talk about all the various things that we end up doing in our crazy, crazy lives?
Well, you can be checking us out on our website, thezenniochronicles.com, or if you don't want to type that much, type zencrown.com. Takes you to the same place. You can also check us out where you hear most major podcast platforms, you know, Spotify and Google and all that fun stuff. Also, check us out on YouTube as well. YouTube has a podcast platform, and our podcasts get uploaded in video format on YouTube every time we put one out. And if you're not listening to us on YouTube right now, go to YouTube, search for The Zenial Chronicles. Make sure you're listening to us there. Make sure underneath that you hit the like button on the YouTube video. And next to that, hit the subscribe button. And then next to that, James, what do?
The bell.
You cut out really weird. You do that again?
Bell the click?
Yeah, that'll work. Okay, yes. Make sure that you click the bell in order to get notified the next time we actually put out a video or a podcast or whatever on YouTube there. And I believe that's it for me. What about you, sir?
While you're there checking us out on YouTube, and again, even if you're hearing this on any other platform, please check us out on YouTube. Do the like, do the subscribe, do the bell. We love to see those numbers on YouTube try to climb up. We're supposed to still get to a certain amount of numbers so we can get our own URL thing, I guess, still, right? Or do we already have that? Who cares? Anyway. Please come check it out. Do all those things while you're there. Check out Mike's other two YouTube pages because he just doesn't do this one. Oh, no. No. He has two others. One that he does with his wife. Nothing bad on there. In fact, all good stuff. This is Chronosode Games.
Yep.
They're also on Twitch. Did I say that right?
Yes, we are.
Where they play video games in chronological order of the story, not in order of the release of the games, so like the Legend of Zelda series, which is a huge, expansive series with like a crap ton of games. They were not very smart, and they released them in whatever order they felt like, which is not the order of the story. But then they put out a book that told the whole order of the story. But then that book was actually not entirely correct, so they had to put out other things. And it's a big mess, but he's trying to make it understandable for you, maybe.
Yes.
That good?
I mean, that's the best description of what that is. It is as clusterfucked as you just described.
Yeah, basically. It's like really trying to explain what actually happens in most like time travel movies.
Yep.
Because there's also a bunch of time travel elements to the Legend of Zelda thing. So check that out, like, subscribe, click the bell on that, and then Mike's other page is his personal one where he deals with all things music, because not only is Mike good at playing video games, okay, I lied, he's bad at playing video games, but he loves doing it, so we just let him keep doing it. And not only does he have conversations with me that y'all listen to, but he's actually really, really good at music stuff. He can play instruments, thanks. He can sing, he can do like recording and producing and mixing and all that crap. It's fantastic. I am actually in awe of what he can do in that. And you will be too if you go and check out Ruling Note Music. This is his YouTube page for all things music related. He puts out parody songs. He puts out cover songs. He talks about recording techniques, gear, stories about old albums and how serial killers are involved. These are all the things that you can find on Ruling Note Music. Check it out. I believe they also have connections. Ruling Note Music, does it not have connection to the two bands that you were in and the music videos that are on YouTube for those two bands?
Well,
it should.
No.
It should. You should make connections, however they make connections with those things. You know, put it in the things underneath. I don't know. I'm not smart enough to do all that stuff. That's why I have mine. Anyway. Check all of those out. Like and subscribe to all of those. Give yourself some entertainment, because who knows? You might be the next one who has to spend the next 3 weeks at home with this new COVID variant, because it just won't go away and it spreads through your entire family. Eventually, you're going to need some more entertainment. This is the way to find it. Anyway, thank you all for listening, and hopefully nobody else gets sick.
Yeah.
We'll be back again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.